Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9.
Can you do the introductions, please, Mac?
Look, I'd love to. It's David Davis. Now, David is a member of the Upper House in Victoria. I think he's the leader of the Liberal Party in the Upper House. And he's Shadow Minister for Equality. And what are the... Sorry, David, good morning.
Good morning, Macca. Good morning, Taz.
Good morning. Great to have you back on the airwaves.
Give us your policy run sheet, David. What are you Shadow Minister for again?
I've got transport infrastructure is probably where most of the spending's happening these days, but also public transport and creative industries, meaning the arts and a range of other things as well. But transport and transport infrastructure and equality, all important.
Yeah.
Of course, our listeners are deeply interested in your and your party's views on equality, and that is a portfolio that you hold. And so we will ask you a few questions about that, if that's okay. But as we kick off the conversation, talk to us a bit about your reflections on the Victorian government's performance around the management of COVID.
Look, I think initially we started off quite well, and the opposition's been very, very determined to try and maintain a reasonably bipartisan stance. And, you know, our job at this moment is to support sensible decisions. It also increasingly has become important, though, to, I think, point to deficiencies in the management. And our job is also, as well as being generally supportive, to point to things that need to be done better. Now, I have some, you know, I've personally asked repeatedly for release of the documentation, the studies, the material, formed the basis of each and every one of the Chief Health Officer's decisions. And as a former health minister, I know how this works. There's, you know, there's a background set of documents that will have informed decisions. The government has just refused point blank to release that information. And we think the reason is because many of the decisions are not as well grounded as they've claimed. And I think we've seen that increasingly come to the fore. We think the decisions on some of the smaller areas were not sensible, fishing and golf and so forth. What on earth were they thinking with those? And then you move to some of the more significant decisions. Victoria was very slow to open up, had the toughest lockdown in the country. And yet we've seen, I think, the mismanagement of some parts of this process badly by the state. The Cedar Meats cluster was a mismanaged process, and, you know, there's no question that the government has got to bear direct responsibility for the mismanagement of that. And the more recent decision on the, you know, on the rally, the large rally, for goodness sake, I don't think they did the right thing on that. I think, I don't, you know, as much as I think I understand people wanting to advocate for that cause.
So, David, are you saying that you're questioning the Chief Health Officer's judgment?
I am in some areas. I think that he needs to come forward and explain some of his decisions, and he hasn't done that in the way he ought to. I've asked him, you know, his people, Deputy Chief Health Officer, and that directly, and I've asked in the Parliament, as have some of my colleagues, for the detailed background documents behind each and every one of these decisions, and they won't release it. So I say, if you want to build confidence, respect, and bipartisanship, you actually have to be honest, and you have to be transparent, and you have to provide some of that key information, and they have not done that. And I think that this is a problem.
Look, I understand that. I think I just wanted to make a comment with golf. I suspect the whole reason for that was to keep Sam Newman at home.
Well, I reckon the Premier probably felt guilty if he let the golfers off the hook, but given he's one.
Personally, I think it's actually about sending a message to the community that you must stay home, and everybody was asked to stay home, so why should golfers be allowed out? Nobody else
was. Well, but let's be sensible about all of this. You've got to have plausible decisions, and if there's some real reason why some of these things were banned, they should have explained that, but they didn't.
No, do you think our community?
And if your aim, and just say one thing here: if your aim is to send a message to the community, sending a wink and nod to 10,000 people that they can march in close proximity, I think is wrong. I mean, I sort of have a background that's knowledgeable about public health, and one of the things I did to the press in the week before that is I read from a book about the 1919 WA story. People may not know this, but WA thought they'd beaten Spanish flu. They had the peace march in July 1919. It's a sort of famous public health story.
Yeah.
And the bug then took off, turbocharged massively across the community, and a huge second wave was launched. So people who know something about public health are nervous with large gatherings.
As I know you do, because you were formerly a health minister, tell us, do you think the LGBTI community is disproportionately affected by coronavirus in any way?
Well, I think the LGBTI community is actually a very broad and diverse community, so there's probably not one answer to that. There's some LGBTI people who I know in the arts sector have been very hit, and I should say something about that. Creative industries sector, which I think has been very, very hard hit. But I wouldn't want to generalise across the LGBTI sector at all, because I think, I mean, it's very broad groups of people.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So I'd like to talk a bit more about some of the issues affecting the LGBTI community. The Victorian government recently announced that they're going to develop a whole-of-government LGBTI strategy. They're currently in the middle of consultation. Are you going to put a submission in? And if so, what will it say?
I'm not sure we're going to put a submission in, but we'll certainly be watching with interest to see what comes forward. I think what we would be wanting to hear is from the community. We'll certainly be seeking access to those submissions so that we can see some of the same information that's come forward. People will be interested to put material, you know, from a whole range of different perspectives and sectors to make their points. So I think, as I gather, this is an exercise in hearing and then deciding afterwards rather than government.
Do you support there being a whole-of-government strategy?
Yeah, I don't dislike the idea at all. I think it's got some real merit, and it will depend
on
how. That's
a double negative there, David. Don't dislike. So in other words, you like it.
The idea. What I was going to say is it will depend how they do this and what they actually come forward with. But I think what we'll be interested to see is the submissions and material that comes forward from different segments of the economy, different segments of the community that have got a particular view about something, and I think that offers some opportunities.
What would be the top two or three issues that you would nominate for inclusion in such a strategy?
Well, I think people's economic independence is important. So I want to see business community having a big opportunity to step forward on some of these areas as well. So that's what I'd single out.
Nothing else?
Well, that's probably the one I'd single out as very important in particular. But look, I think I will watch and read and learn from the submissions that come in. I'm
cool.
Interested to hear.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass on Joy 94.9. Macca.
Thanks, Tass. We're speaking with David Davis. David is the leader of the opposition in the upper house and a shadow minister with a number of portfolios. On your wish list, if you had the ability to implement a couple of policies, and what I'm thinking about, things that you're really passionate about, that when you get up in the morning, you think, you know, I'd actually like to advance the cause on this or make this happen. What would they be?
Well, I'm shadow transport and transport infrastructure, so I am heavily focused on that sector of activity. I think there's enormous opportunities for us to deal with what is the challenge in a very, very large city now, more than 5 million people, and statewide, knitting the state together with better regional links. So that transport planning and focus is something that is obviously absorbing me significantly at the moment, and we'll have a lot more to say about that. But I think, you know, we've got to make sure that where we have large spending, that we actually get good outcomes, we keep within our financial parameters, and we actually deliver outcomes. The government has a lot of programs across the state at the moment, and yet the performance of our transport system has deteriorated over the last few years, quite significantly. We haven't had the outcomes. You know, we've had level crossing removals, but the performance of the trains on those lines has deteriorated. We've had huge blowouts in the metro. You know, the Westgate Tunnel project.
You're not giving us your wish list, though. What you're giving us is a list of complaints.
What I'm giving you is a list that says we want effective transport system. We'll have a lot more to say about this. Before the last election, we talked about fast regional rail. We talked about a series of projects extending train lines in Melbourne as well, and a range of other projects that would deliver much better outcomes for the state. And that's what that's you're asking me a big area that I'm heavily focused on, and we'll look at. That is what we're going to be talking a lot about. The other area I think that is going to be increasingly important that will, you know, the outcome of the COVID crisis is going to be a really, you know, significantly impacted economy. And that, I think, is going to be very fundamental. Economic security, jobs and businesses delivering for the state are going to be absolutely central as we go forward and come out of this crisis. And that is the area where we've put out a paper looking at, you know, what we can do as a state, getting back and back in business. The paper the opposition's released, and people can see that out on the web. There's constructive ideas across a wide front. So I'd say economic security and jobs are going to be absolutely central. That's where I think we've got to be focusing over this next period.
Cool. Look, I've got a question, David. There's a question that I've been wondering about for a while, because I can't get a handle on what the opposition's position is on conversion therapy. Now, I know a number of your colleagues, you know, there's some, let's call it a broad church. I might say it probably needs an exorcist, but I'm not sure what your party's view is on conversion therapy and what your view is on conversion therapy.
Well, let's be quite clear on this. Excuse me just a second. Can you be quiet, please? I've just got noise in the background. look, what I would say very clearly, and I put this on the record in the Parliament, and Michael O'Brien has spoken to this as well, we're opposed to conversion therapy, and we understand that it's not scientifically based. And I think that is, you know, very clearly our position.
So it should be an illegal practice?
We'll support the banning of it if the government brings forward a sensible bill. We've asked specifically, and I've put this on the record in the Parliament, I don't think the government should bring forward a bill that's a big omnibus bill. If you want to bring forward a bill that's a sensible, grounded conversion therapy bill, that bans conversion therapy, that is something we think is sensible. I'm very afraid, and I've said this, you know, in the Parliament, people can go and look it up if they wish, that I'm worried the government will try and shackle 10 other things to it, and they shouldn't.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
They shouldn't. If they're serious about conversion therapy and getting a good outcome there, they should not muddy the waters by putting 10 other things in a bill.
Well, it's great that we're hearing you, that you support it. Yeah. It's great that from our community's point of view that you are supporting the stamping out of conversion practices. That's wonderful news. Thank you.
Now, Tass.
So one of our final questions to you, David, is what's it like being in opposition, and do you feel like you actually get traction? So if there's a particular issue that you wish to run on, is it easy to get traction on it, and how do you go about doing that?
Well, look, I would much prefer to be in government, and I'd much prefer to be a minister in government where you can actually implement things directly. That's the truth of the matter. Notwithstanding that, you can actually have some impact in opposition on behalf of individuals and constituents who've got particular issues that they have to raise. And also on our policy front too, proposing ideas. You know, as I said, the COVID impact on the economy and the broad community, we've put forward a set of proposals there, and I think the government will pick up some of those. They've been put out specifically with the idea of saying, look, here's some ways back, some ways to lift jobs, to lift business, and, you know, constructive proposals like that. We should also not forget that the opposition's role is also, you know, Majesty's loyal opposition, in the old-fashioned phrase, is to actually hold the government to account, to question the government, to point to deficiencies, to ask the difficult questions sometimes. Governments are not always doing the right thing, and you need a strong opposition to actually hold the government to account in the public interest.
So, look, I understand that, David, and I agree with you. Getting traction on these issues, issues that... you know, passionate about, and a listener asked me, you know, Macca, if you were the First Minister or the Prime Minister, what would get you going in the morning? What would motivate you? For me, it would be greater equity and equality and engagement across different communities. Look, I think the challenge of being in opposition is to get that balance, David, you know, between criticism and suggestion and putting forward proposals that... the government of the day is going to listen to. And I make this, let's call it a criticism, of all oppositions, whether they're Labor or Liberal, doesn't matter, that the partisanship that is so often present, when the reality is, you know, and we saw this, I think back to the same-sex relationships bill under the Brax government, where, yeah, there was a bit of argy-bargy initially, but at the end of the day, your party supported the legislation in the lower house, all bar one. Your current state president, Robert Clark, didn't. But there was discussions that went on to make that legislation better. And I know this happens, but I think what the public want is more engagement between opposition and government. And I realise, you know, when you're the government, you don't want to listen. You don't necessarily want to engage. But do behind closed doors. I think that's what people want to see. What do you think?
Well, I think there's two things here. The role of opposition is, you know, there are two hands or two sides to it. It is that scrutiny and accountability and holding governments and their decisions to account. It is quite critical. It is also about proposing ways forward. So there's a constructive, creative side to it as well. You know, the biggest crisis facing the state in a very long time with COVID now, the opposition has sat down, and I've sat through those committees week after week, and we've put out a long, detailed document about the way back into business and the way back for the state. The sort of constructive step, you know, there's scores of constructive suggestions across broad policy fronts. Not all of them will be listened to by government, but our job in this circumstance is to constructively propose, a way back in this circumstance. But equally, as I say, the role is also to hold to account and criticism. This is the most secretive government that we have ever had in the state's history. This is the most difficult government in terms of freedom of information requests. This is the most difficult government in terms of questions of, you know, questions on notice, all of those sorts of things. The government will not provide basic information.
Wow.
They will not.
That's a big call. And I didn't realise those.
Well, I've been you know, in Parliament for quite a while. I remember Steve Brax. I remember John Brumby. I remember us in government, you know, going back into the Kennett period. Even before Kane and Kerner, none of them were as restrictive on information as this government is. None of them were as difficult with FOI as this government is. You know, we've got a very, very difficult road, and, you know, the opposition is increasingly cut out of any involvement in information of that type. And I gave the example of the COVID information. You know, a very simple, basic request at a time of huge community concern. Every time you release a new public health order, release the background documents, the working papers that are behind it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
You know, I'm sorry, this is really, really simple and basic, but they will not do it. They will not do it.
Now, we're out of time, David. We've got a listener sent in a final message. He said, please stop calling it conversion therapy. It's conversion practice, I agree. It's not therapy. If you claim this is
therapy... Well, which is my point, that it's not scientific.
Yeah. If you claim that it's therapy, well, you know what? The people who do it, you know what you are? You're witch doctors. So, look, I want to thank you, David.
Look, go on, please. Just a final point on that. You know, the material I put on the notice or in the Parliament... is very clear on this. We looked very closely at what scientific material was around on this, and it's very clear that there's no scientific basis for it.
Yeah.
And we can't have so-called therapies that don't have some solid basis, and that's, you know, clear.
It's good.
That's great to have a bit of clarity around that.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you for your time this morning.
And look, I want to thank, you know, yourself and all your colleagues for making yourself available on a regular basis. It's great to be able, you know, to speak to Her Majesty's loyal opposition. And I appreciate it, and our listeners appreciate it. So thank you.
Huge pleasure. Thank you.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.